burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn. Now I am here with Don Whitaker. He is the founder of Saronix. We're going to talk about his life. He is, Don, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you.
Appreciate
pleasure.
You. Yeah, well, you and I think, met for the first time at a family business conference. I don't know if I was emceeing or attending, and somehow I realized, hey, you're right up the street in Auburn, and you've built this incredible company, and we're really not in super dissimilar businesses. I'm kind of an investor. One of our companies is selling into the gaming arena.
Certainly.
We sell surveillance cameras.
Yes.
I think we're number one in the market. But as we share your story, I think my story is going to pale. I'm always talking about myself on this show, and my story really pales in comparison. So I think the next time that I met you was I was emceeing an event here at our office here at Haney.
Yes.
Biz, and it was around Culture Lab X, and I went around the audience. Anybody have more than 5 employees? A few hands go up. Anybody have more than 10? Still a few hands up. 20, and so on. Next thing you know, we're at 100, and nobody's hand is up except yours, and I'm like, Don Whitaker is in the audience at one of our events, and I said, how many employees do you have? And you said, 43,000. Okay.
That's kind of correct with explanation.
Okay. So, I mean, that number, though, it floored me for sure. I was stumped up there with the mic, which doesn't happen too often. So give us a little bit of your business background, your story.
It's an interesting
43,000.
I've had such a great life. You know, I grew up in the hood of Oakland, down on East 14th and 98th Avenue. Right close to the Oakland Coliseum.
Okay.
And family, my dad's business had failed, and also started working at a very young age. In 1959, started as a machinist at Marchand Calculators, mm-hmm. building mechanical calculating machines that probably no one out there has ever heard about. You know,
we haven't heard of the company, but obviously a lot of us remember calculators. Right?
Mechanical, so all cams, levers,
oh,
and gears.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember my mom and dad had a TV shop, and we used those when we were adding up the receipts
and so on.
Yeah.
And started there as a machinist and then tool and die maker. And then 1963, I got married and, got our first house there in Oakland. And they announced Marchand Calculators was closing.
Wow.
Right, and I go, oh, this is not good. So then one of the professors at Laney Trade, where I went for my apprentice training, he was a retired admiral. He said, gee, I know they're doing a special project at Lawrence Radiation Labs, now mm-hmm. Lawrence Berkeley Labs.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll recommend you for the job. And I went up there, and they hired me on the spot. And it was building a nuclear ramjet engine, probably the same engine that blew up a couple of weeks ago in Russia.
Oh, wow.
And this was in the early 60s. And we built 4 engines, flew them at Nevada Test Site, and then Los Alamos, which is their top secret facility, and got that. And then, we never really flew it. We just tested it on rail cars because it's a pretty dirty engine. It's an open-air reactor, uses air for cooling. You know, it probably was the Russians' problem. They probably didn't get it going fast enough, so it blew up and contaminated that whole area. And then I became a coordinator of research projects on the campus for all the federal projects and developed, started another company, Whitaker Electric, with my dad.
Okay.
We were building vacuum hot presses for superconducting metals and trip steels and special metals. Just fun stuff, right? And then went along, started another company called Saronix. These are part-time while I'm still working
mm-hmm.
at Lawrence Berkeley Labs, and started a company called Saronix, C-E-R-O-N-I-C-S. That stands for the electrostatic magnetic deflection of a charged particle beam. And we made these quadrupole focusing magnets for all the accelerators throughout the world. And company did pretty well. Well, simultaneously, I'm with the research group, and we developed a silicon lithium drifted detector that could detect quantitative and qualitative elemental analysis of every element on the periodic chart. and I felt it had some real practical uses and innovative, no competition out there. So three of us started that in Silicon Valley, and we chose...
What year would that have been?
This 1963.
Okay, that was still 63. That was the year that, you know, just a history for our younger listeners. So that was the year...
I'm sorry, excuse me, 1973.
73. Okay, so just to put things in perspective, I was born in 1963. JFK was shot in 1963. You're starting your career in 63. 10 years later, 73. That the world had changed a lot in that 10 years. But you're this cutting edge. Obviously, you're a super smart guy. You're talking way over my head in all this technical stuff. But I think we'll be able to relate, at least on the entrepreneurial front, as you get your business going.
Yes. So we, you know, started Kevex, and we made Glenn Seaborg, who was the retired chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission. He became our CEO. Well, we gave him some stock, right? Mm-hmm. And that company, if you were in electronics in the early 70s, you were on a rocket ride.
Okay.
If you had a product that was successful, hang on, you know. And that company grew tremendously. We went public. Stock had split like 20 to 1. And then we had a semi-hostile takeover. Company wanted to buy us, PerkinElmer. I didn't want to sell, but my partners wanted to. They were a little older. And finally, I reluctantly agreed to sell and sold out, and that's now 1979. So in 1979, I semi-retired and moved up to Lake of the Pines.
Beautiful area.
You know, and lived on the lake and got a ski chalet at Squaw Valley I had for 25 years and traveled and, you know... got into tennis and golf and just having a great time.
So at that age, you're in your mid-40s at this point, right?
Early
40s, okay. And you've had this success, semi-retired, I guess, basically.
Semi-retired.
Yeah, and so Lake of the Pines and up in Auburn, so those of you just like a little history, when they built that, that was probably considered the nicest neighborhood in the region, one of the nicest neighborhoods. It still is a super nice neighborhood. On a lake, that's where we did... our senior ball, when I was a junior, I went to senior ball in the clubhouse. It was like, I'm at Lake of the Pines. And yeah. I used to do deliveries up there for my dad's TV shop. And you go to Lake of the Pines, it's like, whoa, this is the nice area.
It was cool.
And you still live there?
No.
Okay.
Another story, I was on a trip to South America for business. And a realtor came by. This is now... We moved there in 79, so this is 2005. Mm-hmm. We've been there roughly 25 years. Loved it. Raised my two daughters there. Great schools. Enjoyed water skiing. I was president of the water ski club. Started a yacht club on the board. Wow. All of that. Just enjoyed life and having fun. And I was on this trip, and a realtor came in, Diane Williams. Never forget her. She came in with a rather rich entrepreneur from Silicon Valley, and he liked our house. And he said, he went in, I had a tournament ski boat, a nice party boat with a wet bar and a bathroom on it, and a Hobie Cat, nice sailboat. A nice custom golf
you
cart.
You couldn't do all that on Lake of the Pines, though, with the motorboat and the skiing and all that,
oh,
could
yeah.
you? You
yeah.
could back then. Now you yeah. can't. You can't wakeboard on Lake of the Pines.
Still can.
Oh, you
yes.
can?
Yes.
Because it's not a huge lake. Okay.
It's 5 miles in circumference.
Okay.
I had a Mastercraft with an LT1 Corvette engine.
Oh, sweet.
I would pull 10 to 12 water skiers on 4th of July with flares and American flags at night and then shoot fireworks over the top of them.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
just having fun, right? Enjoying life and started Saronics in 1981.
Okay. By the same name. It's the same name of the company because you had Saronics before.
Yes, I kept the name.
Okay.
Originally, I wanted to call the company Video Display Technology.
Okay.
And that was a partnership I had with
VDT,
an engineer.
VDT, yeah.
And my wife didn't like that, VDT.
Yeah, VD, you don't want that in your
she
name.
She says it yeah. sounds like a social disease.
Yeah.
We can't have. And I said, well, you know, I kept this name Saronic. She said, oh, I like that name. Any name but VDT. So So we named it Cirrhotics, you know.
I think she made a good decision. Helped you with that decision.
So I changed the wording and put an X on the end.
Okay.
So it looks a little higher tech.
Yep.
And it fits on a California license plate.
Okay. Know? So 43. So walk us through this. Okay. You start the company. You make these display products. You're selling display products into the gaming industry. But it's more than that.
Many markets, but gaming accounts probably for the gambling machines account for 90% of our business and profit.
The gambling machines, would that be like a slot machine?
Exactly.
Okay.
Slot machines, lottery machines, kiosk machines. We do for CoinCloud for all the Bitcoin kiosks.
Oh, okay.
Any high-earning kiosks.
And that would include like sales in Macau. I got back from Macau earlier this year. The casinos there are bigger than Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Macau is the number one gaming destination in the world.
Wow.
Number two, most people don't know, is Singapore. Number three is Las Vegas.
Amazing.
We sell to every casino throughout the world. Now, my business plan, that's the unique part of Cirrhotics, and has been for I've had six businesses, and every business I started with a unique business model. And that model is first a unique product, a unique technology, hopefully little or no competition, higher profit margins, minimum of 25% gross margins.
So if you have no competition or little competition, it's a little bit easier to preserve that margin, right? So, yeah.
Right. And, you know, right now, in the current business I'm in is video monitors or televisions, which is one of the most competitive markets in the world. And probably close to $1 trillion a year market worldwide. The Chinese have taken over that market. They started in about 2002 when it went digital, went to LCDs. Mm-hmm. Previously, it was analog technology with cathode ray tubes.
Right.
And now it's digital. The Chinese business model is a good one, and you're probably not going to beat them at it. And it's high volume, low cost, okay quality, generally 1 year warranty. But they all operate, all of your Far Eastern companies operate on a just-in-time inventory. That's how they keep their costs low.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how that industry has changed. In fact, I believe, the first HD TV in Sacramento. My security company prior was trying to sell whatever we could, and we believed in HD TV, and so we bought Sony products and resold them. And we sold one. I think it was probably $10,000 or something. It was really expensive, maybe more. Anyway, that morphed into a security company, but I remember every time we sold the displays, we ended up, the margins were really tight, and as Best Buy and the consumer electronics industry became more developed, as people started putting these things in their homes, the margins were destroyed. For me, they were. And I have to imagine, if you're talking about China, they're going to drive the margins down in any environment.
Plus, they have government assistance,
You
know, so it's, and I was in that market when I started the company in 1981. We were sole source. We developed the first digital color monitor.
Oh.
And the first one I modified a Sony Trinitron.
Wow.
CRT. Cut the boards apart, rewired it, and made it digital because the televisions were operating on an NTS signal.
Right.
NTSC signal, which is modulated video. And so it's interlaced, so it's refreshing at 30 times per second. So you get this flicker if it's a static image. If it's television moving, you don't see it. But if it's a static display, you'll get this 30 hertz flicker, which is very objectionable. And they had digital color monitors then, but they were all monochrome, single color. They were black and white, there were amber, there were green. You could have one color, but monochrome. And so I modified a Sony Trinitron, and that's how I started in the market.
Interesting.
And in Las Vegas, they had 1981 again, they had just introduced a video poker machine, and it was black and white.
Wow.
And I thought, hey, that's a cool thing. You know, I thought, you know, and there's television. Let me call up my engineering buddy. Let's start cutting things up and rewiring it. And so we made it into a digital color monitor. And I went to this company, Fortune Coin Company in Las Vegas, and said, yeah, I've got a digital color monitor. And we've got, 16 colors back then. CGA, that's the original CGA. Can I try it on your display? And he said, well, sure. So we tried. He said, oh, wow, this will really go. I said, how can I, soon can I have someone? And I said, well, give me 2 months. So we set up, that's when we really got serious. We'd been dickering and doing some development. That's when we got serious and started the company. Wow. And, and Fortune Coin Company did quite well with video poker. And then in Reno was a company called Zercoma, and they did the video reel slot machines. Those companies merged and formed International Gaming Technology, which is now a multi-billion-dollar-a-year company. Mm-hmm. They're into lottery and number one in all the casinos.
So. Well, I talked to Brian, and I think you and I talked prior that at some point you developed a relationship with Apple.
Well, That leads into the video poker.
Okay.
So about 1986, a company came to us. We're doing all the monitors for the video gambling machines. Also developed the original IBM PC monitor, which was CGA.
Okay.
IBM didn't feel they were developing the personal computer in Boca Raton, Florida, and quite an innovative center, and they didn't believe anyone would ever want a color monitor on a computer.
Right.
Because IBM was all monochrome, one color. I said, why would anyone ever want color? I said, well, you're developing this personal computer, and you have an NTSC output for a television set, so kids could play games on the television, right? I said, well, you've got the color inside your chip. Give me three outputs, red, green, and blue, and then I can give you digital color. It's not going to cost you but 5 cents. And they reluctantly agreed to do that, and hence, and we developed that for IBM, the injection moldings for the cabinet and all, and,
wow,
and that got IBM going. And now you don't see too many black and white
displays. No,
it's
we
all
don't.
Color.
So let's keep this
sure.
story rolling along. So you fast forward, now you do touch sensors.
Yes,
and
so then in the 1986, Syntec, a company in Michigan, came to me with lottery for the Michigan Lottery. And they wanted to develop a lottery machine that didn't look like a gambling machine because they don't have gambling in Michigan, right?
Mm.
So we developed a slant top unit with a surface capacitive touch sensor. And surface capacitive has a coating on a piece of glass that's conductive, optically clear, and your body has 2,000 picofarads capacitance. When you touch this, it senses exactly where the touch is. So we developed that originally for the lottery machines. Then IGT bought Syntec. Now it's IGT, Fortune Coin Company, and Zercoma have merged. So IGT buys Syntec, gets the touch technology, and that launched it through all the gambling world. So that's surface capacitive. So then I had a team of three working on projected capacitive, which is a more accurate technology and multi-fingered. With surface capacitive, it's only single point touch, just one finger. So we're working on that and worked on it actually 12 years. So now fast forward to 2004. We're at the International Gaming Show in Las Vegas, and a team from Apple sees and says, gee, we want to use that on a new product we're developing. And so we met with Apple and with Steve Jobs and his team, and I wanted to do it in Auburn because there was a market in the gaming industry, and Steve Jobs said, no, we got to do this in China.
Mm-hmm.
So China was just opening up about 2004, and the first stages of capitalism sometimes are to lie, cheat, and steal, you know. And I had some friends that some pretty hard stories in the early days of China. There's still some going on where they steal your technology, steal your money, take over your company. And so I was reluctant to do that and partnered with a good friend in Taiwan and some investors. It took $51 million to set up the factory.
Wow.
And set that up, and turned out to be the iPhone. And that's my good friend Michael Chen, who's the CEO and all of TPK, a $5 billion a year plus business with 43,000 employees.
Okay, so there you, that's hence the employee
yes.
number.
Yeah.
Well, your company's been obviously super successful. You're still, okay, so you're 78?
77. Sunday, yeah.
Oh, okay. You look. You don't look 78, by the way. So I was.
Well, thank you.
I was guessing at the age based upon the numbers. So you're about the same age as my dad would be. I last time I talked to my dad, I was about 30. My mom and dad both got sick when I was in my 20s. And my mom had a brain aneurysm. My dad ended up getting cancer. So I think this is interesting for me. Beyond the tech, my dad was very technical as well in his own way. He worked for the military and then opened up a TV shop. So he was technical in consumer electronics.
A TV shop
in downtown Roseville. And
interesting.
So that was I grew up delivering televisions and that
analog
stuff.
Was just back with cathode ray tubes.
Yeah, you bet, absolutely. You and and before even solid state, right? You had these little tubes that. In the olden days.
That's analog.
My dad started it in 69. And then, so anyway, I grew up around television.
Sure.
So, and you guys are about the same age. And this is so kind of an interesting trip down memory lane. But one thing that, and I don't know if our listeners kind of feel this way a little bit. When you're in your 20s and 30s, a lot of us, probably look for mentors. We look for people that might guide us along. Somebody who's been successful at the level where we might want to be. And for me, my dad was kind of that person in my 20s. But then after he went away, after my mom got sick, I didn't have that. I had my baseball coaches, but nobody had really achieved the success that I was on a mission to achieve, and so I didn't have that person that I could look up to. So today is kind of like that moment. Here, you've had this tremendous success.
Sure.
You're my dad's age, roughly, and now I'm having this opportunity to try to relive what I maybe missed by having someone that I knew that might be sort of a father figure. So dad, right? So I'm adopting you as my dad for the afternoon.
Wow.
I'm interested in so sitting here on my little coffee table here is a book, Principles by Ray Dalio, and then I think you know this guy. You recognize that guy, Martin Harmon?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
He's my neighbor.
Okay, so...
We're good. I was to his birthday party in May.
Wow,
so we're quite good friends.
Yes, I thought you were, and we had an event. My listeners know that my goal is to have 100 millionaire business partners in my backyard, and I'm an investor, and so we had a party in my backyard. We finally did it, and I invited Martin Harmon, and he's mid-90s, right? So he's
yes.
a little bit
yes.
old to be that father figure. He'd be more like a grandfather figure for me, maybe a father figure for a guy like you. And so now I have you on the show. Now all I can think of, I'm going out to lunch with Martin, I think in a couple of weeks. And I guess I'm thinking what can I learn from Ray Dalio, from Martin Harmon, from Don Whitaker, people who have had this tremendous success, but they're 20 years older, right? 20, 25 years older. And maybe walk me through maybe some of the principles that, I don't know, that you've learned over the years that maybe a guy like me hasn't learned yet, or maybe remind me of what I have learned a little bit.
I think you've got it, Mark.
Well,
you've got it. Yeah.
Well, thinking about life and whether we're talking to Martin or anybody, it seems like, I guess in this Ray Dalio book, there's a section that says, remember to reflect when you experience pain. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. So sometimes that reflection on the tough times, as I sit back and think about my dad and my mom or some of the troubles I've had in my businesses, these are some of the life lessons that I've gotten. And so I want to hear some of that from you, some life lessons in your career that were maybe very helpful. And maybe you're still, I'm sure you're still learning today.
still learning. It's and life's a journey, and it's fun. First thing's the fun factor. Stay focused. You know, life's a pathway, and try to have a plan for your life, and a 1-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, and try to keep that path as straight as you possibly can. There's always a few side roads occasionally.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've experienced a time when maybe, and a lot of entrepreneurs do that. You're saying stay focused and make a plan, work the plan. But it sounds
every
like
day.
The way you learn that is by not doing that, in my opinion, in many cases. Was there a time where you weren't focused, you were chasing too many shiny objects? And I mean, how did you learn that lesson? You can't learn it from a book necessarily.
Not really. You know, I've never had difficulty with my pathway through life. Been married 56 years.
Okay.
We dated 4 years before that.
60 years with the same woman.
Oh, yeah. That's part of it.
Yeah.
Get your life together. Cause
some of the big decisions you got to get right.
Yeah, and then it's nice to have a partner in life, and make commitments in life. Stay true to those commitments.
What's your wife's name? Sorry to interrupt you.
Kay. Kay Whitaker.
So, Kay, if she was sitting here, how would she describe you? How would she describe her life partner?
I think a great life, a good father. You know, wonderful father, I'd say. Still, one of my daughter works for me. The other daughter, she and her husband own several restaurants in the area.
Oh, wow.
Mountain Mike's franchises.
Wow.
And doing very well. One in El Dorado Hills. That's extremely successful. It's also a beer pub with 20 craft beers. And
Well, you say a good father, an extremely successful father. And I think some of the times today we look at, America's youth, they're not, you hear a lot of grumbling from old people about the millennials and so on. Your kids are probably a little bit older, maybe even closer. How old are your kids, by the way?
My eldest is 55.
Okay.
Youngest, 50 plus.
Yeah, so they're in my age group.
Sure.
But you still see that when you come from a family that's successful like yours, that sometimes that gets the best of you. You know, the kids end up spoiled, and it does, the ambition doesn't transfer to that next generation.
It has. Yeah, they. I don't think either one are spoiled. And then I have 4 great grandkids. You know, all of them in college.
4 great grand.
4 grandkids.
Grandchildren. Yeah,
they're great.
They're great. Yeah, 4 but, grandchildren.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're all in college. One's at San Diego State in civil engineering. One's just starting Santa Cruz University in robotics.
Mm-hmm.
One's at UNR in agriculture, and one just graduated from Sac State in an international degree in business and working for Disney in Anaheim. So,
wow.
Same thing with the grandkids. They're all focused. Just,
interesting. And you guys lived, you grew up, you know, you're living on the lake in the 80s where the kids are teenagers. It's a great life. Someone might say, wow, your kids had it really, really easy. If they did, how did they end up being so ambitious? Or did they not, were you hard on them?
I think pretty easy.
Hmm.
Never had issues with them. Never any major issues with the kids or grandkids.
Nobody has that perfect of a life, Don. Come on.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but no major issues. No one's ever been in jail. Maybe a speeding ticket, 1 or 2.
Wow.
That's pretty rare. Just good kids. I'm sure they've had a little fun in their life, too. I encourage fun. I've had sometimes too much fun.
What's too much fun look like for Don Whitaker in your life?
When you wind up in a hospital in Las Vegas.
Uh-oh.
After being at the LAX nightclub.
Uh-oh.
Drinking Red Bull and vodka in your 70s, which you should never do. It was worth it. I might do it again, but you should never do that.
I heard you were never in the hospital before, so that was the time.
Oh, I forgot. This is our secret.
Okay.
Now, my wife doesn't know this. But
you've stayed healthy, too. Look at you. You look like a very young man. You're active. When I was talking to Brian, the guy that sets up our show and guests and so on, he says, Mark, this guy's got as much energy as you do, and we knew you were in at least your mid-70s. But so that vibrancy, I mean, I'm kind of like, where does that come from? We want to like drink from that fountain.
And everyone should. I think the fun factor, and to put energy in your life. I tried to avoid negative things and negative people. Try to surround myself with great friends and look on the positive side. You can always dwell in the negative on life. It doesn't help any to worry about it. So get on with it. Forget about it.
Okay, so your wife, I'm assuming she was, you know, you're dating for 4 years. Now you've been married. So now it's 60 years together. Everybody doesn't age the same, right? So obviously my parents have passed away. I know people in their 70s that really feel old. So have your friends, you've seen some of that happen, I'm sure, in your world where obviously you've had losses, but you've seen your friends get old before your very eyes, and here you are, your wife and you are still cranking.
Stay active. Hmm. That's one reason I'm still working. Okay. You know, I'm very good at what I do. I've got no competition in the entire world. I have fun. I've structured the company so there's no debt. There's no worry. You know, our business model's the opposite from the Chinese, where their business model's high volume, low cost, okay quality, but long lead times. Mm-hmm. Our company's business model is higher cost, $150 more generally per monitor, very short lead times, same day to maximum 3 day lead time on 535 different products.
Wow.
Higher quality, 4 to 6 year warranty. And so if you're, say, a Thunder Valley casino and you've got 4,400 gaming machines on the floor, average earnings per machine in California is $415 a day. So when that video monitor goes down, machine doesn't work very well.
Right.
And so you don't want to wait 4 to 6 weeks to get your product from China. You want it right if they'd even take an order for one.
Right.
There's so many different models. So we ship same day in most cases.
Continuous uptime and all that kind of stuff.
So that's the business model. Try to develop a business model where you're something unique, something special. And here is an extremely one of the most competitive businesses in the world, yet I found this nice niche. I'm not aware of a single competitor in the world.
Well, it's. I mean, I'm wondering. Well, two things. Number one, how you found that, or how did you advise somebody else? Everybody would love to have that niche. Sounds good. Develop that. How do you do that?
I've had six of them.
Wow.
Six businesses. I've never had a competitor.
Well, how did you arrive at that? Because I mean,
Well, that's what you look for. That's what an entrepreneur looks for, something unique, something special that no one else is providing, and sometimes some proprietary technology. Keep that very confidential because everyone's out there trying to copy you. Yeah. Now, in the case of video monitors, you know, we're very proprietary. For 17 years, we were sole source for the entire lottery and gaming industry. And then when it went digital, starting about 2002, that's when the Chinese took over the market. So that's when I changed my business model. Everyone else tried to compete with the Chinese. Well, how low can you go in price?
Right.
And RCA, Radio Corporation of America,
yes.
That's now a Chinese corporation. And they got all the patents and everything. So I want higher margins so I can treat my employees good, pay them a very good living wage. We have $5,250 a year for an employer educational assistance program. We have $5,000 a year for daycare assistance programs, wow. 100% medical, dental, eyeglasses for all of them, 13% profit sharing, hopefully soon to go up.
Great.
And that, because you have nice profit margins, again, minimum 25, and we're closer to 40%.
Mm-hmm. Great culture. Obviously, you know,
you can do nice things.
Yeah, that's, you know, when you have that sort of financial position, you can create that stuff. A lot of us are sort of scrapping now. You're thinking about age, so I'm in my mid-50s. Yeah, I've sold my companies. I have no debt either. I've structured my life so that I don't have to stress about that either.
Yeah.
And
no stress.
But I got it hasn't always been like that. I was up to my eyeballs in debt as I was scaling my companies, and it was. I don't think I was that worried about it personally. I didn't stress out. My personality is not to stress over being in debt. But Okay, so the people that are on their way up, though, the people that aren't, it's easy to understand why you're in your 70s or maybe in your mid-50s, you shouldn't be up to your eyeballs in debt anymore. But those 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds that want to be, you know, want to live, you know, financially free and so on, do you recommend no debt even on the way up?
Certainly lessens one's stress. You know, when I started Saronics, I had no debt. My house was paid off. I had a nice condo, no debt, a little money in the bank, a nice retirement. I cashed everything in. I got the biggest loan on my house. Cashed it all. You're betting on yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's
so
a pretty
you
good
had
bet.
Already had substantial financial success. You were living a great life. Now you decide to start the new Saronics, and so you mortgage things up a little bit. What was the nervous? You're in your mid 40s at that point, and you're getting levered up all of a sudden after.
You can start over in your mid 40s.
Yeah,
it's a little harder at 77.
Yeah.
But in your mid 40s, you're betting on yourself, and to me, that's always a good bet.
Okay.
And stay positive. Surround yourself with good people. Bring on great employees, great mentors, engineers, and. And
what did your wife say when you guys were starting to put the mortgage back on the house and so on? Was she okay with all that?
Very supportive.
Huh.
Yeah, because we've been through it before. You know, this was my sixth time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And each time was pretty good.
Well,
some better than others.
Well, I have these things called hanging with Haney, where I meet here in my office with 5-7 people, and we talk about our stresses and our big dreams and so on. And a lot of times I hear from people that they're unable to go home and share share what happened at work with their wife or their spouse, because they don't want to stress out their significant other. You know, hey, that's my sanctuary. When I go home, it's like all it's family time. I don't want to stress my wife out about all the things I'm worried about at work. Did you have that same philosophy?
She works with me every day. She's my human resources
She already
director.
Knows.
Oh, she knows everything. My daughter runs the front office.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you guys are you're in the battle together.
All the grandkids are on the payroll. They all work for us in summer.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so any lessons there in terms of best way to have? Because you also hear stories about people who work with their family, and there's like, there's always one of the kids or one of the people that, you know, goes off in a weird direction and in frustration.
It can happen. You know, that's where some of the mentoring comes in. And here's great value. You can have a great life. Great job, and we'll help.
What's the biggest disappointment you've had?
Wow. I'm not sure I'd do anything differently. Biggest disappointment. I'm a positive person, so I can't think of one.
You just don't think that way.
No, if it's a disappointment, I forget about it.
Yeah.
I don't focus on negatives. Never have. If it's negative, forget about it. I can't change it. You know, half the negative things in life you have no control over. So I'm not going to worry about...
But there's times you can't get rid of them that same day. You know, there's disappointments that happen.
I try to.
Yeah. You try to get rid of it the same day. Just boom,
wipe it
out.
Yeah. I've got a switch. Out.
Wow.
Why do you want to maintain negative things in your life? Get rid of it.
It sounds good, but how do you do that?
It's a mindset. You know, just don't focus on so many people waste so much time focusing on negative things in life that are outside their control. Focus on the positive, and you'll be happier. People want to be around you because you're having fun. You're positive. When I go to China, a limousines greet me of friends, and we go out the first night and party. So, so I've got to sleep on that airplane because when I arrive in Hefei, mid-China, I mean, and that's a communist military company I work with there. We've gone mountain climbing with them in the Wangshe or Yellow Mountains, and we just party and have fun and do great business things together. But it's having fun. Respect people. Respect everyone. Care about them. If they're negative, I'd rather not spend time with them. Be kind, but, you know.
Well, how, so we're seeing the unrest in Hong Kong. We are obviously also seeing things in the news about the trade war and the dispute and so on. So obviously your industry is affected in some level by some of this turmoil.
It hasn't been.
Oh, why?
First off, we're a foreign trade zone. Have been since 1988. And so we've never paid a duty.
Interesting. And that's, where is the zone?
Auburn, California.
In Auburn, California.
Right at the airport. Right next to Martin Harmon's Ridge.
The Ridge. That's where we do the Haney Biz golf tournament every year.
We have 21 acres there.
And is your 21 the only part of the foreign trades zone, or is it wider than that?
It's just, we're in the county. New Airport Road's the center line, and that industrial park at the airport is the city of Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a non-contiguous part of the city where the businesses are. Now, in the city's air park industrial center, you can't own the land.
Gotcha.
You lease the land. So I'm across the street with Martin Harmon in the county where we own the land.
I had a foreign trade zone in a property outside Austin. I wasn't able to capitalize on it. Yeah, we imported stuff from China and shipped it around.
You know how it works.
What's that?
You know how it works.
Well, I know enough to be dangerous, but that's history for me. For now, for somebody who has a manufacturing company where they're importing parts and pieces or products from Asia, from China, is there still rationale? Is there still land available to do that?
Well, what you do is anyone can set up a foreign trade zone, basically any place.
Okay.
Okay. This, at the time, John Doolittle mm-hmm. was a representative for Placer County in Congress. So this was when Asia was starting to take over the television market, and a lot of my competitors were moving to manufacturing in Asia. At that time, I had 105 employees in Auburn. And I went to John Doolittle and said, you know, pretty hard to compete here in Auburn. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got 15 and even 25% duties I'm paying to import cathode ray tubes and all from Taiwan, from Korea, and China. And, you know, if I don't get some relief on these tariffs, I'm going to have to move to China like everyone else or just outsource it. And I said, I've read about a foreign trade zone. And in a foreign trade zone, you can import all of the parts, all of the commodities duty-free. Then within the foreign trade zone, you can change the harmonized tariff schedule number, okay, to the finished product.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, in the case of video monitors, okay, you were paying 10 to 25% duty on the components, but the finished product of a television set or a video monitor was zero duty.
Okay.
So I would manufacture within the foreign trade zone, change the commodity status or the HTS schedule number to a video monitor, export it to Thunder Valley, Reno, Nevada, Vegas, wherever, mm-hmm. duty-free.
Nice.
So for 30 years, I haven't paid a single duty.
Wow.
Still haven't to this day. Now, things can change, but currently to this day, if you manufacture a television or a video monitor in China, it's zero duty.
Well, okay, so I'm going to look it back into your history, too. So you're a very smart man, the wisdom.
Never went to college, Mark.
No college?
No college.
Not even one day. Never stepped foot on
Laney Trade School, if that
counts.
Okay,
yeah.
It's a trade school.
Uh-huh.
But never went to a formal college. I'm not that smart. My grades in high school were okay. I made it through high school.
Interesting.
But I'm a machinist.
Yeah, a machinist that got recognized. And then obviously, maybe you weren't book smart, but there was somebody had to, along the way, you had to understand that something as simple as, hey, you want no competition, right? Those kind of simple things.
Why
came
would you
to
want competition? Why?
Yeah. Interesting. So you don't have, obviously you're very technical, but you're saying that's just from being in the trades. That's just from being in the game.
this is just common. I mean, this is simple stuff.
Okay.
Right? I mean, keep it simple. Don't make it hard. Why would you want a competitor? Why wouldn't you want high profit margins? Then you can reward your employees, do nice things, have no debt, build up some cash for the hard times, right?
Wow. All right, so no college. This is obviously outside the normal thinking, but maybe in your generation. My dad didn't go to college either. I didn't go to college either, but most of the people my age.
You're sharp.
Yeah, well,
wow.
I'm good at surrounding myself with good people. If I had one skill, I was great at throwing parties in high school. I was sort of the
me too
goof guy, yeah.
I worked for Lawrence Berkeley Lab, I'd have money left over from the Atomic Energy Commission budget. So at the end of the year, if I had extra money, I'd buy 55-gallon drums of 190-proof alcohol. So I was providing the parties for most of the campus.
Interesting. Well, it sounds like we definitely have something in common. Obviously, we have some industry commonality, but the no college and the guy that's kind of good at throwing parties is also interesting. If there's a piece of that.
Having fun.
That's interesting that you're that person. You're high energy. I'm high energy as well. So I
surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Have fun. Make it where they want to be around you. Reward them well. Take care of your good people.
Create a life that's not super stressful. One of the other things that I've been saying for a number of years is, you know, why create a life where you want to escape from that life? So I like, when I come to work, I work, but I like it. And my wife really likes to travel and take vacations, but I'm more of a guy that likes I like my life. I like hanging out with my kids. I like going on the boat with my family.
Exactly.
I really like my life. Instead of like, whoa, boy, I can't wait for the weekend where I can get away.
And what you've developed here, your facility, you've developed a fun place to come every day. I have the same thing. My facility, the main facility, 63,000 square feet of manufacturing. I have a bird sanctuary with 300 exotic birds from all over the world. We have four different types of swans. Black swans, you name it, and crown cranes and Stanley cranes from South Africa, mandarin ducks.
Interesting.
And we have over 2,000 koi and mandapa that I had hand-carved in Nepal out on our little pond. And 21 acres, we have a half-mile par exercise course. Just, you know, try to develop a facility where it's fun to come every day.
Yes.
I'm in every day at 6:45. I love what I do.
That's awesome.
I'm having fun. Now, I try to finish at 2 so I can play tennis or golf.
Yes. You play at the Ridge?
Actually, I live in Meta Vista at a place called Winchester.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So
that's a great place.
There,
yeah.
And, you know, great golf. But I also play at the Ridge with Martin doesn't play golf, by the way.
Right. Right.
Great guy.
Yes, great guy. Okay, so thinking back over the years, so as we talked about, so I graduated from high school in 81 when you were launching your first business. 63 is when, you know, Martin Luther King had the big speech, I Have a Dream. And when you think back over the course of history, right, we've seen the economies go up and down, and we've seen tragedy in America. I mean, talk to me about who you respect. I mean, who are the people that you respect in our society, and who stood out to you over the years as you think about, like, well, these people were key to America's success?
Well, in a technical realm, you know, Thomas Edison, a great one.
That's a little before your time, though. Even Thomas Edison, when did he develop the with the light bulb, electricity?
Electricity, telegraph, many, many inventions. Schottky invented the transistor in the 50s.
Okay.
That did away, like you mentioned, the tubes from a television. You used to be able to see a diode.
Right.
Well, that's the Schottky diode he developed.
Oh, I did not know that.
And he lived in Auburn, California.
Wow.
There's a street named after him.
Wow.
You know, so it's some of the professors, it was a wonderful thing where I worked for Lawrence Berkeley Labs, Lawrence Livermore Labs, Nevada Test Site, Los Alamos for 10 years. And I was on a technical level. I was an accelerator technologist also. And so learned a lot of my technical stuff on the job training. And I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then since I was in charge of the experiments on the campus, I was allowed to audit any class I wanted without credit. So I have taken courses.
Right, that's some pretty high-level stuff.
But never for credit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Are there people, though, leaders? I mean, you mentioned some of the very smart people. Steve Jobs, obviously, you work with Steve Jobs. But
I really admired him. He was an asshole, but I mean, a genius.
Right, remember to delete that from the Money 105.5 version.
You know,
I like how you're calling it how it is, though, because you could say that in a podcast.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's perfect. He was not your favorite guy when it came to who you want to be around.
Tough to work for.
Yeah.
Someone you wanted to be around, but you didn't want to hang with him,
mm-hmm.
right? Just great guy. And so many great people I've met in business. And in the gaming industry is a good, great business to be in, because if you're not making in gaming, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
So we have no bad debt.
Yeah.
It's a fun business.
What about the people at the top of the casino industry, right? You got guys like Steve Wynn and so.
Oh, what a fun guy.
Yeah.
My wife spent an hour in his pool at the Mirage with Steve Wynn.
Wow.
Playing with his dolphins.
Oh my gosh.
And now Steve Wynn wants to trade or buy, but I want to trade for two of our blackneck swans. So my wife wants to go back in his dolphin pool with him again.
Do you think we can get Steve Wynn here on the Mark Haney show?
I'll work
maybe
on
Jack, if you can text him for me, I'd appreciate
it.
That.
He's one of the good guys.
Yeah.
He's fun, maybe too much fun.
I've heard that rumor.
Well, that's why he's not CEO of Wynn
anymore.
Yes,
yes. They are a good customer of ours as well, but we never really dealt with Steve. Just as we kind of close up, we round out career.
Cy Red was the closest friend I've had in gaming. The founder of IGT.
Mm-hmm.
His original company was Zircoma, Cy Red Machine Company, and he took some of that technology from Bally, where he had worked for years. He was a sharecropper in Mississippi and went to work for Bally as a salesman for pinball machines.
Wow.
And then got into electronics. His career, much like mine, no education, an amazing guy, started IGT, bought Fortune Coin Company, and the pioneer in the gaming industry. And we were very close, and he wanted me to join him when he started Zircoma, but my wife would move to Reno. She loved Lake of the Pines.
Oh.
And so I didn't join the company kept Saronics independent.
Well, it looks like you've done well. You've paid a little bit more in taxes being in California, but I'm sure it's been worth it. Plus, you got your zone. Yeah.
I love California.
It's a great place to live.
One unique thing with California, we're very innovative here. We aren't a conformist society. Look at this guy.
Yeah, I'm the most casual dresser in any meeting I go to, and you can
cool.
get away with it in California. You really can.
Yeah, you can. But, that's what makes us great. We're innovative. We're free thinkers. We're also fruits and nuts, but that's fine. You can be anyone you want, and that's accepted in California. In the Midwest, I was born in North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
and not that way.
Yeah.
But the work ethics of people from the Midwest, if someone comes in from the Midwest, I hire them almost on the spot.
Interesting.
Phenomenal work ethics. They're honest. They give you a great 8 hours of work. In California, that's not always the case.
Right.
Now in China, that's why China's never going to be our equal. China is a conformist society.
Right.
Everyone conforms.
They're working because they have to.
Yeah, they're not innovative. That they've stolen all the technology. They haven't innovative anything. But that also makes them wonderful at manufacturing, because they're all conformists. They work together well as a team. Sometimes Americans have an issue with that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, their artificial intelligence industry, I mean, it's obviously starting to rival ours now in many areas. They must have some creativity.
But much of that technology was stolen.
Yeah, which, yeah.
You know, yes. Certainly in my industry, television, it was all stolen,
mm-hmm.
So.
And we have a man that's attempting to, in the White House, trying to stand up to some of that stuff.
Yeah, I'm hoping he's successful.
Yeah.
It's gone on far too long. I'm not sure you're going to change the culture, because the culture, they don't think there's anything wrong with stealing technology. In fact, they've told me many times, why design it and develop it when you can just
right.
steal it?
Yeah.
You know, that's what they do. And they don't think it's wrong.
Right.
So
they don't have to conform to American copyright laws or patents and stuff like that.
So it's going to be tough. I hope Trump understands it's a cultural change. They don't do that over there. They're used to just copying. Just copy it.
Yep.
And they don't honor patents. So I've never had a patent for that very reason.
Don't need it, and you still are able to have this proprietary type product.
That's the key. Proprietary technology. Don't patent it, because now you have to expose your technology. Keep it proprietary.
Never heard that before. Very interesting.
Another concept.
Yeah.
I'm a little weird on some of my concepts, but they've worked well.
Well, that's very
me.
Helpful. So, okay, in rounding out this this conversation and thinking about other people that that may be like us, may be different than us, and I don't want to put myself in your league in terms of business, but I will put myself in. We have some common, you know, the no college, the want to make the workplace fun. You know, life's too short. Let's make it a great place to work. I mean. Any advice to the entrepreneurs out there that are they're young enough to be maybe my kids or something like that, and they're ambitious as heck, maybe like you and I are or were.
Surround yourself with good people. Have some good mentors in life, because one thing with being young, you think you know it all. You know, you don't. There's so much to learn, and it's nice to draw on the expertise of folks like Mark and what he's done here with his incubator group to help entrepreneurs, because there's a lot to know. You know, I've made some mistakes along the way. Don't regret any of them, but, you know, I learned from each one. You certainly learn from your mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes in business. Hopefully not big ones. Try to keep them small, and be happy. Have fun. Don't do the stress. Enjoy life. Like, we took all our employees. Twice we've gone on cruises. We'll go on a cruise. Take all our employees on a ship cruise.
Wow.
And just like the doctors have done for years, you know, you have a seminar on board the ship. You take over one of the nice bars, have mm-hmm. a seminar every couple of days so you can write it all off. It's team building.
Yeah,
and they can bring their significant others. And in fact, our guy in charge of shipping and receiving, he broke up with his girlfriends, so he took the UPS driver.
You know. Are you guys hiring now?
But absolutely.
But you got to be from the Midwest. Come in with the Midwestern accent, and you're probably going to get a good shot at having a job there.
Well, yeah. My wife, she's from Oklahoma.
Perfect.
Same good, hardworking people. We love Californians, too, but... there's so much to do in California. Sometimes it's hard to find people that'll work, give you a good hard 40 hours a week.
No question. Don Whitaker, we learned a lot. Great conversation. Look forward to having more of these with you if you're ever up for it. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mark. One of the good guys, man. What you've done here, amazing.
Thank you very much, Don.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.